Senator Jungbauer, you have Senate File 1198.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have Senate File 1198, which is such a phenomenally exciting bill that I'm wondering where the rest of the committee is, because I'm sure they wanted to hear all the details of this bill.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, there's a lot going on right now. I know there's some conference committees, and so they've been coming in and out, checking in. We do not need to have a quorum, of course, so we'll just hear a discussion. I hear you have an amendment that needs a little bit of help and work, so that'll be laid over also.
All right. That's what you tell me I have. I have.
Yeah. I love it when you obey.
I'm so easy to get along with. I have become very much compliant in these last in about the last week. I don't know. I just am going to be an easy to get along with guy. So, Senate File 1198. I think we have Dan Hall is here to give us any details if we need him. But Section 1.
Where did that come from, Senator Jungbauer?
Dan Wolf.
Dan Hall. Yeah. What am I saying? I'm going to claim ignorance today because
we'll claim that bump on the head. Okay.
I'm looking over. I'm going, wait, where's my friends? And yeah, it's good to have a lot of friends. And with I felt really good this morning. I will be honest. I'm kind of going downhill. The head's starting to hurt at this point in time. The late night meetings have gotten to me, and I think I need to go home and go to sleep tonight instead of going to
we'll
my
put you out of your misery
meeting.
Soon
so,
here. Absolutely.
So members, that means we're going to get through these bills really fast so I can go take a nap. Okay, sorry, Dan Wolf. I apologize, Dan. Come on over and tell us all these good things about this, you know, because I'm sure everybody will want to know the details. Section 1 corrects a cross-reference for charitable contributions that does not exist in the statute anymore. The change references the proper statute, 300.66 subdivision 3. Section 2 makes PUC review of utility securities issuance clear in statute. PUC is currently reviews utility proposed uses of capital funds on a periodic basis. This change just reflects that action by clarifying it in law. I don't have a copy of the amendment handy. Aha. So, members, we do have the A1 amendment, which changes page 1, line 9, gives us some new language. Everybody have the amendment? If it's handed out, that can be. So it inserts that can be deducted by the public utility in calculating its Minnesota franchise tax under Chapter 290. So it is just an agency bill correcting basically old language, and Dan Wolf will give us his quick details and if you have any questions,
don't ask Senator Jungbauer, I think I'm going to have Mr. Fuller to explain that amendment and where that's going right now.
Madam Chair, members, this is a technical amendment. As you said, there was a reference to the state income tax laws, corporate laws, in the section that allowed for certain expenses for charitable deductions to be approved by the commission. That law was repealed in 2001. It was not replaced because we are now conforming with the federal government. The section that's in the bill is not a tax provision. It's a provision that does talk about corporate charitable deductions, but it's not a tax provision. So this amendment A1 is just is here to be laid over as well because nobody has seen it. It's hot off the press. But what it does is it makes the reference in the bill that replaces the obsolete reference also a tax reference with the thought that that may be more appropriate just for the ease of administration, but we don't know that yet, so we're putting it out there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Mr. Wolf.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dan Wolf, Assistant Executive Secretary with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. Not a lot more needs to be said, but yes, the bill is extremely technical. I did share it with Department of Commerce, Office of Energy Resources, or as they now refer to themselves, the Department. As we heard this morning at the commission meeting, and I did share with utility folks as well, and certainly know of no controversy. They're both just cleanup things. The first one is, as Mr. Fuller said, is a cross-reference that was repealed some time ago. We just want to make sure that it's a proper reference there, and it's Mr. Fuller and I have talked, it makes more sense to deal with it in a tax code situation than the corporate permitted expenses provision. That was just a change that had come back from the advisor that way, but I think Mr. Fuller's change makes more sense. And then the second section is just also clean up when the commission has before it consideration of approval of issuance of securities by utilities, they have to act, obviously, within the public best interest, and if it's appropriate to do so, they can act on that and approve it. And it's unclear under the current statute if that has to be done one issuance at a time, even though there may be a series of issuances, or if the commission has the authority to do it again, if appropriate, to approve that series, so that we're just trying to clear up an ambiguity, plus make it more efficient, more cost-effective for both the commission and the utilities, that if we know that this three- or four-step series of issuances is appropriate, rather than deal with it one at a time, have people come back in one at a time. If we go forward, just have it approved for a series and go from there. So, and the rest of the bill is just, you know, the grammatical changes that you see, the which to that, the shall be to are, and, you know, the kinds of things that former Senator Frederickson would be very,
very proud of.
And Senator Higgins, she likes that stuff too. Are there any questions? First, on the amendment that we are not going to adopt, we're just laying that over also, but also on the bill, Senate File 1186, or 98, excuse me.
1198.
Any questions on that?
Seeing no questions, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 1198 and the A1 amendment be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Senator Jungbauer moves that 1198 be set, laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Again, members, we are going to just be listening and hearing all of these bills. I have the next four bills, and they're mostly the department. It sounds kind of like a sitcom, actually, but these will be laid over into the omnibus bill. As you know, the House has a humongous omnibus bill, and I think as this body here, exactly, this body here is a little more thoughtful, and we're doing things, and we're going to have continue our very good, thorough, thoughtful discussions about these. So that's the plan.
Senator Rosen, I always love it when you give me this spot, and I do feel better and my head comes back a little bit, so.
Quite so cloudy there, huh?
The members, I may be a little cloudy, but I'm still extremely conservative. So, Senator Rosen, you're going to start with the Senate File 1195. So whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1195 is the cold weather disconnect data requirement. Currently, the PUC Office of Consumer Affairs collects and maintains the cold weather disconnect data only for regulated investor-owned utilities. And the Department of Commerce Energy Information Center collects and maintains the cold weather disconnect data for the co-ops, the munis, and the delivered fuel suppliers. And the ability of the co-ops and munis to provide accurate disconnection data has been difficult. Additionally, the delivered fuel suppliers are not regulated and do not keep disconnection data. So basically, there has been no request for this information collected and maintained by the Department of Commerce. So this bill is basically just removing the requirement from the Department of Commerce to collect and maintain this information, and it will hopefully have some reduced administrative costs or process.
Why do we have testifiers?
So with that, Mr. Chair, any questions? And like I said, these are department bills going forward.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vandiver?
I do have a question. Mr. Chair, Senator Rose.
Glad you got those glasses there, Senator Vander.
Yeah, these are working good. I guess I just have a question for the department. This is a hopefully it'll save some money, but if we were telling them to do this, we'd have a fiscal note probably 4 pages long. How come we don't know how much we're going to save?
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, I will defer to the department, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, Bill Grant for Department of Commerce, Division of Energy Resources, and as I have been reminding my staff, the tagline at on the classical station on NPR is, just remember that all music was once new. Our name, in the same way, is new now, but will come trippingly off the tongue, I'm sure, in a matter of sessions from now. And I'm going to let Janet Streff, our manager of our State Energy Programs Office, deal with this question. I don't believe that we think that there's going to be huge cost savings associated with this, since we're not really collecting the information now. But this is more a matter of cleaning up some language and statute that just doesn't pertain at this point. But.
Okay, Ms. Streff.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's true. We have historically sent out a survey and then followed up. The entities are not required to report, so we've really just relied on their goodwill. So I can't say that we've spent a huge amount of time on it. Those hours that we do track towards state funding, although I will say that the majority of the funding for our Energy Information Center has been paid for from the U.S. Department of Energy funds that we get anyway. So we try to keep those state dollars spent at a minimum.
Thank you. Senator Vandiver, did that answer your question?
No, but I probably won't get a better answer.
Senator Benson?
No.
Oh, do you have a Senator Dibble?
Thanks. Well, maybe Senator Vandiver, we should decide that this is our idea and we'll book $120 million in the bottom line. And we'll bring it into some committee.
I think, Senator Dibble, that that proposal might be one worth considering.
All right.
I would just say that maybe we can keep that in mind when if we have a proposal for the department at some point to help us out with some data collection or something, and maybe have a little flexibility to do that at some point and leave it at that.
Thank you, Senator Vandiver. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions, I move that Senate File 1195 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill.
All right. Thank you. Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 1195 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Now, Senate File 1196.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1196 is the transmission project report. Currently, the independent power producers, the IPPs that are owning the wind farms with transmission lines interconnecting to the transmission grid are required to file transmission plans every 2 years. This bill would clarify that the owners of these wind farms with transmission interconnect do not have to file the transmission plans. The exemption applies to any high voltage line with a capacity of 200 kilovolts or more, or less than 1,500 feet in length, and any high voltage line with a capacity of 100 kilovolts or more with less than 10 miles of its length in Minnesota, and that does not cross a state line. This modification eliminates the need of 9 of the IPP wind farms that are participating in this transmission planning. And with that, I would like to turn it over to either Ms. McConnell or Director Grant.
Thank you, Senators.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. I do have one note that the goal of this statute that is in the bill is really to exempt any company that just has a single transmission line that interconnects their generation facility to the transmission grid. And there's maybe a handful of projects that are involved with this. We know that those entities, really, they're into the transmission system just because they want to interconnect. They're not going to be involved in planning the future of the transmission system, so there's really no need for them to be involved in the biennial transmission plan. So no one has suggested necessarily that they have to be involved in that, but we want to make it clear that there is no requirement on those entities to be involved in biennial transmission plan. They are still welcome to be part of it if they wish to. Any member of the public can file comments, but we want to remove a requirement that really has no useful purpose for the public.
Thank you. Any questions, members?
Questions?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, then I move that Senate File 1196 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 1196 be recommended to pass and laid over on to possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. 1196 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I have Senate File 1197, which is the Department's Energy Technical Bill. And if I could just go through this section by section, I'd appreciate it. Section 1, Subdivisions 2 strikes the obsolete language that requires proceeds from the sale or licensing of software products developed by the Department of Ed to be credited to support weatherization activities. This provision removes an outdated reference to the Department of Ed for a prior period when the weatherization program was housed there rather than in Commerce. And when I first read this, my question was, why was it in the Department of Ed? But we can ask that, or somebody can answer that later. It just seems an odd fit.
Yeah.
Section 2, Subdivision 2, modifies the reporting requirements for the Conservation Improvement Program, which would provide Commerce the ability to audit a utility's most up-to-date SIP activities rather than just their proposed plan. And in this area, Mr. Chair and members, I would like to get comments from the utilities to make sure that they're okay with that area. Section 3 strikes the language requiring Commerce to use state rules when administering state and federal weatherization assistant program funds. The distribution of these funds must operate under the Department of Energy rules. And Section 4 moves the requirements for the second quarter assessment done by the PUC on utilities to the third quarter. This would align the assessment with the fiscal year to the extent possible. So with that, again, Mr. Chair, I will defer to either Director Grant or Ms. Reif.
Mr. Grant?
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to answer any questions on any further.
I guess on the question on Section 2 that Senator Rosen had was, are there any utilities that are concerned with this Section 2 change?
Perhaps the department, Mr. Chair, can address that, but perhaps they've already had conversations with the utilities and that this is not going to be an onerous requirement.
Mr. Grant?
Mr. Chair, we haven't had anyone come to us about this. I think we've explained this as the plans that we normally get from utilities every 3 years are prospective in nature. In other words, they are for the coming 3 years, and this simply allows us to, as we're reviewing progress that utilities are making, to consider annual reports from those utilities, which they are giving us anyway. And so, I don't think that there's going to be an issue here, but we'll certainly make sure to inquire of our utility friends.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. I don't see anybody in the room chomping at the bit to come over to the microphone, so Senator Benson.
Sorry. Do they for any reason currently have to file an annual status report, or would this be an additional reporting requirement? I'm not familiar enough with this.
Mr. Grant or Ms. Striff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, utilities are required to file annual reports, status reports, so it's not an additional requirement. What this does is it allows Commerce to ask for an audit of a portion of one of their programs, and the current language only allows us to ask for an audit of the entire program at the time that they are filing their plan, which is now every 3 years. So it really gives us and the utility, I think, an opportunity to delve into a smaller part of their whole plan, one program that we may think should have an audit.
That actually seems like a pretty good plan to me, in as much as we're not going through the whole thing, that we could take it a little, so it's much easier on the utilities to be able to check out a small portion. Any other questions, members? Senator Dibble?
Thanks. Could we just go over Section 3 again? I'm not understanding.
Mr. Chair, I will defer to Ms. Strife. She can explain that better.
Thanks, Ms.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. When weatherization assistance first started in the state, there was a federal program, and then the state also put in funding for the program. And so there is requirements for state rules to be promulgated. They are currently quite outdated, using amounts for audits that were back from the 80s. And the state funding ran out and was not replaced fairly early on. So for the past almost two decades, we've had federal funds. We are required to run the program with federal regulations. There are U.S. Department of Energy weatherization program notices that come all too frequently. And so what we're doing is really cleaning up the language, that these are not rules that are for the program that we're running right now. And it would be nice to not have that in the back of my mind, that we're supposed to be having a rulemaking in the law when I know it doesn't make sense.
Senator Kibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So are the are the rules themselves going to be repealed too then?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, yes, they will.
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, doesn't anybody want to know about the Department of Education?
Oh, yes. What's the deal there?
Seriously.
What's up with that?
Seriously. Really don't think there's a lot of interest in that, Senator Rosen, but okay, you can hold off on that. And
I'm very curious. Ms. Strife, can you explain that, please?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, the Low-Income Heating Assistance Program and the Weatherization Assistance Program were with the Department of Economic Security for many, many years. They, at one point, went to the department when it was called Children, Families, and Learning, because Head Start and other family programs went, and they believe that heating assistance should be with those programs because it helped the families, and because weatherization assistance was part of the LIHEAP program, that went over there as well. After several years there, they went back to economic security, and then finally in 2000 came to the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And Ms. Strife, is that a good fit? Are we going to be changing it? Are you having plans to move this around again?
Madam Chair, Senator Strife. Rosen, we have found it to be a very good fit. The weatherization program is within my state energy office, and I think as a result we've paid even more attention to the energy efficiency of the measures that are put into the homes and really trying to make them as energy efficient as possible. So we've been there. They've been there now for 11 years, which is a pretty long time.
Thank you, Ms. Treff. Any questions? That was so exciting to hear that you have no questions. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1197 be recommended pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill.
Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 1197 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Senate File 1197 is passed and laid over for inclusion. Senator Rosen, Senate File 1194.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1194 merges the Energy Innovation Office and the Reliability Administrator. And this new office will have the task of representing the interest of Minnesota residents, businesses, and governments outside the state or regional, national, and international energy issues. The major decisions about transmission cost and planning are being made at the federal, FERC, and regional MISO level. It's very critical that Minnesota have a full representation at proceedings that are affecting cost of energy infrastructure and reliability of power to Minnesota. Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment to this bill, and it is I move the A1 amendment, please.
The A1 amendment is being handed out.
Mr. Chair, as this is being passed out, it just gives a timeline for this new designation. What we have right now is going to expire in June 30th of 2012, and it was put in place in 2008, so we're just extending that by another 4 years.
4 years. So then you're looking to pass the amendment and then...
Open it up for discussion on this, because I would like to have Director Grant or Ms. O'Connell explain the reason for this merger.
Ms. McConnell?
Mr. Chair, can we move the amendment onto the...
Okay. Yes. Senator Rosen moves the A1 amendment. First, any questions on it? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment passes, and so we have before us Senate File 1194 as amended.
And Mr. Chair, if I could to defer to Ms. McConnell on this.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Ms. McConnell.
Thank you, Chairman, Senator Rosen, and Senators. I just wanted to give a very brief history of what's happened with the Reliability Administrator and the very clunkily named Energy Issues and Intervention Office, or EIIO, which, you know, leads into singing a childhood song.
It is bad.
But the Energy Issues and Intervention Office has been in place for at least 25 years, I think longer than that. And the role of Energy Issues and Intervention is to watch what's happening at the federal issue, work with the utilities and other stakeholders, and represent the interests of Minnesota. And at the time, long time ago, in the 1980s, there was a lot happening at the federal level. There were frequent rate cases that affected our utilities, and we were very involved in what was happening there. There were subsequent, times when nothing much was happening at the federal level. And as a result, we cut back the staff, and we weren't doing as much there. And at the time that the Reliability Administrator was set up, there wasn't a great deal that was happening at the federal level either. There were fights among utilities to see who would pay for the costs of transmission, but there wasn't a lot of transmission being built. However, in the time since the Reliability Administrator was set up, a lot has happened at the federal level. There has been deregulation. There's been open access of federal transmission issues. There's been building of a great deal of transmission. There have been questions about cost allocation. Who's going to pay for the cost of transmission? What transmission is going to be built? There are questions being asked that are billion-dollar questions, and it's very important for Minnesota to have a role in those proceedings, because we've seen how when we speak up, and when we work with the Public Utilities Commission to speak up as well, FERC does listen. FERC won't listen to everything that we say, but the more that we're there, the more presence that we have, the more credibility that we have, the more we are able to represent Minnesota's interests. So we looked at the fact that the Reliability Administrator's, the legislation that set up the Reliability Administrator was sunsetting June 30th of 2012, and we looked at what was happening with the Energy Issues and Intervention Office, and we saw this as an opportunity for us to merge the two proceedings, the two offices, so we would have the Reliability Office or Reliability Administrator become the Energy Reliability and Intervention Office, so that we would continue the work, because we know there's going to be transmission issues at the federal level going out for at least the next two decades. It's going to be important to have that office continue And what we want to do is to remove the sunset for the reliability administrator for at least 5 years. We're certainly willing to come back in 5 years and let you know what's happening at that time. A lot can change in 5 years. A lot has changed in the last 5 years. So we want to be able to remove the sunset, to keep doing what we're doing, have my staff look at the issues that are coming up at the federal level, intervene in those issues, work with the Public Utilities Commission so we're as efficient as possible. So if you have any questions about what it is that we're doing or what it is that we're proposing, I'm glad to answer those.
Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, if I might, the bill does, we don't have a person in the reliability administrator position presently. We do intend, with passage of this legislation, to move ahead to place a person in that position. We are working with a technical consultant to advise the staff that are doing this work now on technical matters and represent us in these matters on occasion. But the intent here is to focus these activities in one position in Ms. O'Connell's shop and to be able to provide that representation on a going forward basis.
Mr. Grant, I have a question. When you go to line 4.8, it starts and it talks about the general administrative costs of this administrator. Now it changes to office, the availability of assessing $1 million in a fiscal year. Is that currently being assessed? And I'm having trouble really understanding how that all gets utilized.
Mr. Chair, the original reliability administrator legislation came with $1 million per year assessment authority. We've never assessed at the $1 million level. I think it's bounced around somewhere between $250,000 and $650,000 per year. We have approximately $600,000 in the biennial budget as an assessment for the coming biennium, and that presumes that we would both work with the technical consultant that I mentioned as well as hiring the position that I mentioned.
Okay, thank you. Somebody else have a question?
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Gant, this would be one of the FTEs that you are currently requesting that has that is in the energy finance bill? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, that's correct.
Seeing no other questions, Senator Rosen?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1194 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the energy omnibus bill.
Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 1194 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the energy omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Senate File 1194 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Seeing no other business members, we are adjourned. Thank you.
That was easy.
Like the last thing that's on my schedule.
Lack of questions today. It's all from my, my head. And my